Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I mean, we could do a whole podcast of that, which, you know, if by special request, maybe we will as a Christmas single. But for now, welcome to the World Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ewan Patterson.
Hello.
Hello. And Josh Brown.
Hiya.
And we thought we would just break down all the sorts of things about Jedi Fallen Order because we've all finished it and it's a bit of a mixed bag. So we've kind of wrote down a bunch of different talking points in general. You know how these things go. It's a spoiler cast. So we'll open with the biggest thing, at least as far as I think it's the biggest thing that most people don't know, and that is Darth Vader himself is in this game.
What?
I know. And where did you guys come down on that? I really liked his placement. I like what they do with him after that.
It was interesting because I feel as though I brought it up to you a few months before release that I thought maybe the game would end with Darth Vader coming out of nowhere and just killing you. I thought they could do that. I thought, you know, there's an element of inevitability to a story about a Jedi set in between episodes 3 and 4. Even though there are surviving Jedi during the original trilogy, you think that the whole premise of the game is to restart the Jedi Order, and obviously that fails. So I thought in the end, you can't have a Jedi rolling around with the Rebellion by the time Luke Skywalker's around. So you might have to cut that loose end. And thankfully, I thought the way they did it was expertly handled. I mean, Darth Vader as a terrifying figure in the vein of Rogue One is just absolutely incredible because it recaptures the terror we all had as children of Darth Vader in the original trilogy. When he came in and just strangled that rebel in episode 4, we were all scared. I was for definite. And I thought they really captured that horror perfectly, the idea that you had to run. That bit when you're in the elevator and you're just pressing it over and over again to try to get out, I thought was great as well. And I will have to say that for a brief moment, everyone can attest to this, when I played the game and then BD hops on Darth to shock him, I screamed because I thought that Darth was going to kill BD. I was like, no, BD! And then
I told you that bit when, that whole sequence I think is brilliant. It's one of the reasons that I think it ends extremely strongly. But that bit, you're running down the big corridor, Vader comes out of the door in front of you, and like you said, BD jumps on him. I missed the D-pad prompt and I screamed as well because I myself go, no! grabbed the controller off the floor and like hammer the D-pad. Turns out it just waits for you. It's all right. They didn't code a whole BD death sequence.
They do.
Do they?
If you don't run away, Darth Vader kills you in gruesome ways. And if you wait too long, he crushes BD in that bit and impales Cal.
Oh, I must have just got that.
Tilford, almost risked losing BD.
But that thing is, in that moment, that got me even more into the moment in terms of, like, yeah, I just saved him. And my favorite moment in the whole game is the bit when Sia, that whole sequence when Sia sort of becomes a Jedi again and she makes the save. I love, like, hero save moments anyway, full on Han Solo style. And I love that she flips into the scene and then just, like, fends off Vader.
That bit
for
where
you.
He tosses her like nothing, though. I was like, oh!
Like, no. I know. I think it's because they do a great job of like you said, like reminding you of how powerful Vader can be. And obviously, in recent memory, we have Rogue One to pull from. It was very much playing that sequence of being one of those people just running away from him as he's this infinitely powerful dude. Josh, what do you think of the whole thing?
It was awesome. I want it on record, right? That Scott Tilford accidentally spoiled this for me.
I did.
The other day. I got a little message.
First
saying,
time in my life I've done this.
What about that Vader part? Hey, and I was like the meme of the guy blinking, thinking, what Vader part, Scott? Half an hour later, I got to it, but it didn't dull the impact. Because obviously my mind was racing when you mentioned this, and I thought the same thing as you, and I thought, this story is a bit suspect. Something's going to have to happen to cut ties with this, you know, pursuit of rebuilding the Jedi Order. And I thought, maybe it could be a cool Rogue One moment if Vader did turn up and just absolutely kill everyone. I'm pleased they didn't do that, though, because I think they managed to have their cake and eat it, too. They got to finish that story in a sort of satisfying way that made sense, but because it was on Cal's terms, that gave that character more agency and a more satisfying arc, but then he still managed to nail the, you know, intensity of Vader, him coming after you and you not being able to fight back. I thought that was awesome. Mm. When it first throws you back into control of Cal and you sort of expect a kind of boss fight, or at least I did, I was a bit sighing because I didn't really want to fight Vader because like, there's only one way that can turn out. But I thought by making him essentially sort of, you know, like a slasher villain, I thought that was a really interesting, you know, take on the character. And I like Vader in Star Wars games. I love the first mission in The Force Unleashed when you get to be him as this slow, wrecking presence and then him as sort of like this all-powerful monster movie, essentially. I think that's just a great way.
That seems to be one of the ways that they're going with him. And obviously, like, playing off Rogue One, it's the same kind of, like, setup for that character. And that gave me, because I thought Cal was a bit of a mixed bag. I thought he totally was, like, serviceable for what they wanted him to be. And one of my favorite Cal moments was the bit where Vader just says, like, I recommend you flee, or something like that. And then Cal just sort of, like, ignites the saber and says, yeah, probably. But he just wants to fight him anyway. I love how much, it's just that, you know, embodying the heroic side.
It's weird to me, because I was kind of going to and through Cal for most of the game. I thought, on one hand, you know, on the surface, he is just another stale, pale Jedi with the blue lightsaber in between episodes 3 and 4. That's not necessarily anything unique, and given that the game takes so much from A New Hope, as we already know, it could have been a little bit iffy, but I thought Respawn did it very well. Not that I think that the game absolutely had to have Cameron Monaghan be this Jedi. I think he does well in the role, but they could have done any character, and they could have done... Because the most interesting thing about Cal is the PTSD element, and the way they really... have Order 66 actually, you know, we've seen a lot in media these days where you take a very literalist approach to stuff that's happened in cinema or like an event in a fictional narrative, and then they take that and say, well, no, wait a second, let's pause for a second and kind of process what that event would be like to live through if you were actually a Jedi during the Purge, and what would it be like to lose your master, what would it be like to be on the run and be a fugitive your entire life. And I thought they nailed that very, very well. I thought Cal was great, and I think the thing that really hammers it home to me is that in the little moments he has with BD-1, they're back and forth, they've both lost something, BD with obviously his memories and in Eno Cordova, and then Cal with his entire life beforehand, and the way those two bond really anchored the story well for me, I thought, despite the fact that it kind of does get middling in certain places. I thought those two as a duo are great, and then Sia obviously came into her own towards the end. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more Grease, but
because considering how immaculate the cutscenes are put together and the acting, and like there is a lot of emotion in the back third, like in those back sort of cutscenes, I loved that stuff. And when it all started coming back together, I was like, okay, you have nailed the landing. Even though like you just mentioned, I think that there's a whole bit in the middle where it just doesn't necessarily know what it wants to be. Like it kind of wants to be an open-ended Metroid. But then it also kind of wants to have the drive of an Uncharted or a Tomb Raider. And for me, they were like, and then there's the Souls combat in the middle. So like some of those elements were a bit like they clashed quite a lot. And then towards the end of the game, and we can go into this because Josh, you mentioned that you thought parts of the ending were a bit of a slog or have dragged a bit.
Yeah.
And it's like near the end, you start getting all these goals where it's like, okay, go to this planet because that's the one thing that we need is here. Oh, actually, no, it's back on this planet. Oh, actually, no, it's over here. And like you're just getting the same thing like 3 or 4 times in a row. And like that in the moment when you're just getting told over the comms and you're mid-mission is like, oh God, I'm going to... And you go back over here and like go through the exact same path of the exact same enemies. And I thought that was the one bit where it was maybe at its weakest.
Me too. I just want to quickly touch on what Ewan said there about the Order 66 stuff, because I love this story so much, because I'm not really a fan of like, you know, the expanded universe or anything. I'm sure it's all really great, but
I've not seen any of it either.
It's just not for me.
You're both bad.
I know I'm a bad Star Wars nerd, but I only go by the movies. But Order 66 in Revenge of the Sith, it's always been presented as this kind of obviously tragic thing, but it's very quick and it's very clean. And I like that this has sort of made me rethink that part of the universe in a way. It's dived into it more deeply and it has sort of, you know, changed my outlook on the films to an extent, which is what great sort of, you know, interim stories like this should do. So I commend it for that. But at the same time, yes, Scott, I did find the end, or at least the second half of the game, quite lacking in terms of potential stakes or scale. It opens on that great sort of train sequence that has, it's so visually interesting and it's so unique. And then you get the part where you're climbing up the, let me get this right, what is it? Is it ATS?
AT-AT.
AT-AT. Yes. And I'm climbing up, yes. Climbing up the AT-AT. It's really good, big set pieces. Yeah. Just doing this all over the place.
Like a sloth.
I feel like there wasn't many of those towards the end of the game where they should have been coming thick and fast. And it wasn't bad. I just sort of found myself falling into the same, you know, repetitive sort of formulas over and over again. Like you said, there is a lot of go to this planet, then come back to this planet, then go to that planet again. And you're kind of going through areas you've already been through. And that is fine. That's not bad by any means. It's still good. I was still enjoying myself. But I felt it didn't quite have the drive that the beginning had.
Well, yeah, I mentioned like the clashing elements kind of thing. I for the long like there were times in this where I really really hated it, like in a very small amounts of hate. But it was the case where I was like, man, you had so much potential. I love Respawn as a studio, and when you think of like Titanfall 2, they just were like, okay, let's think of like 8 brilliant set pieces, and then we'll weave a story around it to make it make sense. And that works in terms of like designing something for a game. And then in this case, it was like you had this really kind of rote like Tomb Raider-esque dungeon crawling stuff, which like was fine. You know, they were possibly knew where to climb up this and move this orb and whatever. And I was like, yeah, it's fine, but like it's getting in the way of this great combat, which clearly needs to be fleshed out. And they get there towards the end, or they did for me, especially to the point where after you get the split lightsaber thing and you charge the underwater base, that was when you finally had a full repertoire of abilities and enough enemies to make have fun with it, where it was like, you know, force push this guy, choke this other guy, throw the lightsaber at the next guy or whatever. And like that's the sort of stuff where I was like, man, this is brilliant, and I wish you had this earlier in the game. Whereas for me, there were parts where I was like, another tomb puzzle, like really, you're gonna cut this off so much to put me back here again?
That's interesting, because I actually quite like the way they break up the pace there. I think as someone who is a bit of a lore fanatic and is really into the Star Wars Expanded stuff, I really liked the new mythology Respawn brought to the table, the stuff with the Zephyr. I thought that was quite interesting. I loved going back, and there are places in this game that take and reference specific stuff from the Clone Wars animated series. Going through Dathomir was such a treat, and not only just because I can be Smoke, because I guess that it would be in the game right from the off, but also from the just Ilum as well. That's like literally a reference to one of the episodes from the Clone Wars where the Jedi get the crystals, and the, one of the puzzles you have in there, you literally exactly see that happen same, in the show, like the way that they really do cool. that. And it's so, the level of detail there I really loved, and I like the way that the environment told the story as well. I think that is lost when you have to backtrack and you're facing the same enemies over and over again, because it takes away from the feeling of you're exploring something new.
Yeah.
When you have to go through an entire new wave of enemies in the exact same order in the exact same way. But I think for the most part, I thought the puzzles were fun enough to do, and it helped make the emphasize the combat, I thought. You know, any other Star Wars game, there's a danger that you could have an over-choreographed flippity-doo-dah, flippy thing going on. But Respawn really kind of, like, I think you mentioned this in the last podcast, you did the sequel trilogy-esque balance between the prequel combat and the original trilogy combat, where it's slow and considered, but still artful in a way. And the way that they break up the violence, I thought, was made those moments feel more impactful.
That's a great
me.
Way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I would agree as well, because one of my favorite moments in the game came right towards the end, where I should have been barreling through the main story, but I decided to go back to Zephyr to go to the place where like it's like the down ship and stuff.
The Venator, finally, the mystery, yes, so good.
I could finally go underwater, and I realized when I was checking the map, there was a place I hadn't explored, and I thought, oh, I'll just check that out. And I got to that cool, like, new dungeon, essentially, that's so big and told such a great story, was so visually interesting. I thought, oh, you know what? This is good. This is really good. I love this Uncharted tomb raiding kind of stuff, and the combat's great as well. And I do think there's a way to sort of mesh both elements together. And to me, that area was emblematic of that. That could be a great game that fires on all cylinders and meshes them as perfectly as this all the way through. For me, you didn't quite get there, but the promise of that mission, the promise of the set pieces toward the end, just, I want a sequel, man.
I think they'll fire on all cylinders. Just they'll keep going the momentum that this ends with. That the downed ship, what was the name of it?
The Venator.
The Venator is like, one of the best bits in the game. And the fact that it is optional, like one of my other favorite moments in the game is the thing when you first go down to the ice caves underneath Zepho and you get captured by one of the Haxian bounders.
Haxian Brood.
And he takes you to this like underground arena, and they make you fight in front
of the Mongolian throat singing metal band.
Yes, and it's so good. And like, because it is so like, oh man, has everyone seen this? Have I just stumbled into this? Like, that's one of the best cards they play. And like, that's the feeling that you get when you go to the Star Destroyer as well. And it's like, that stuff is phenomenal. I think the key thing with that is choice, because you choose to explore wider. And I think that main through line could have been so much tighter instead of like being so like stop-start.
I mean, we can't, I did praise exploration, but I do think that the collectibles aspect that the game really needed more needed more fleshing out. Force echoes and boxes are fine as they are, but it gets a bit,
it's kind of
it gets repetitive going through and then hitting a button to open up a box and doing this. I would have liked a greater range of collectibles. I think the Arkham series does that really well when you have Riddler trophies and riddles and interview tapes and whatever, and that really helped flesh it out. And I love the idea of environmental storytelling where you're going through and learning about all these things. The Venator with the story of the Jedi and the Padawan who are caught on this ship as it's crashing down, I thought that was incredible. But there are certain moments where you're looking, it's like, oh, here we go, I've got to try and find here, get this little force power up and more health for BD and another tin can spray for the robot. And it didn't always like didn't always shine through, even though I thought the environmental storytelling was there for the most part.
We should talk about customization, because I think that we can talk about lightsaber stuff like specifically, but I also think for me, the Cal's customization was a pretty big letdown.
It was, like, yeah, definitely.
I like his base sort of suit. I like that makes him look like he's more appropriate to be bounding around different areas and all over Dathomir and whatever. But like to focus on ponchos and give you like 50 ponchos. I'm not against the ponchos, but like give me other stuff.
The ponchos were a weird one for me because I was like, I remember when we played down in London, I was like, oh my God, you've got this many ponchos. And I assumed that they would just have different things as well.
Totally.
Because what I did, I thought the best way Cal looked was he had the base suit and then I got the Shyuk bird thing from Kashyyyk. It was an optional one that you could get. And it was the problem with the ponchos for me is that not many of them looked Star Warsy. Mm. And like the one that I found was actually like, it was really cool because it had the bird imprint on the back. And I was like, that's a really great thing to earn after you've done the boss. But because it's optional, people are going to miss it. Mm-hmm. And I thought the customization in that regard was a bit of a letdown, especially considering that, you know, the Mantis stuff, I mentioned in my review that I thought they could have done more with the Mantis in terms of customization. It's like, okay, we can reskin it, but why can't we change maybe the weapons capabilities or do different things in it? Like, I like the Terrarium, don't get me wrong, but it's like, I feel as though if they treated it more like the camp in Red Dead, for instance, where you could have been upgrading Grease's cooking or doing whatever, I thought that would have been potentially more compelling as a gameplay feature.
I agree. I feel like there are so many elements with the customization and, you know, that kind of hub world where they could have improved, but I keep going backwards and forwards on it because I wonder how much of that was just sort of a limitation of time. Like, we don't know how long Respawn were sort of like, you know, in full development on this game. It's about 3.5 years,
quite a while,
4 years
or
something. But we know that they probably had to get it out before Rise of Skywalker came out. Yes. We know there were obviously like deadlines in place. We know that they aren't used to making third person games. So I'm sure that was quite a challenge getting that up and running. So I'm trying to give them some leeway in that the customization, I quite liked it, to be honest. Some of the ponchos towards the later game, I actually found really compelling and I kept going backwards and forwards between a couple. There's a lot of them that are crap. There's a lot of them that are just now in some of the most garish, ugly, horrible
the
things
pink
I've
one.
Ever
the
seen.
Hot
and
pink
this is
one.
Me.
Yeah.
This is me talking. And the hot pink one should have been my jam. You in
they give you the hot pink one for beating Ogdo Bogdo, the first like major like roadblock in that game, and then they give you this weird sort of bright pink, you know, dinner lady style poncho. And
it's like roadblock.
It is.
And that would have been fine.
What, did you
right?
just feed him first time?
Yeah.
Okay.
It took me a couple of times.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyone who
beat one of
you
the first
Jedi monster.
Humble brag. On the topic of customization, because I did want to mention the lightsaber, and one thing that I mentioned to you guys before you completed it was that I was at odds with the customization of the lightsaber in a later story beat, and that's because, you know, you find out that the lightsaber that Cal's using is the one that his master gave him, and that's why it's a double-bladed saber, because your master had one, it's severed at the hilt, and I thought that was a great storytelling device. I think the idea of Cal, the trauma of Cal, you know, feeling as though he wasn't good enough to save Jarrod T'Pol was kind of visualized by this lightsaber that he's forced to carry. That's his burden. That That's is cool. The legacy of his master that he's carrying in his hands. Mm-hmm. And then Respawn Go, at the same time, they create this really cool lightsaber customization system that for those of us who are never going to get to go to Galaxy's Edge, to actually have the ability to hone our lightsaber with hilts, emitters, switches, sleeves, metals.
Some of them are from Galaxy's Edge.
That's amazing. That is absolutely incredible. But at the same time, I thought,
tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When that lightsaber gets broken in the vision on Dathomir, and then you go all the way to Ilum, which is a great segment, and you get all those new lightsaber crystals, I did feel as though it felt a little bit redundant as a moment, given that for most of the game, I'd been customizing my lightsaber, and it didn't feel as though it was... It frustrated me because on one hand, it's a lose-lose situation because if you hold back that great customization until that point in the story, you've basically wasted a really good feature. But at the same time, I thought the narrative would have really helmed in on if it really, really made an emphasis of this is your master's lightsaber, this is your burden that you're carrying, and that's why Cal's so unconfident and whatever. That would have been really cool.
It's weird because I didn't have that much of a thematic connection to the lightsaber itself. It was more that I
never emphasize it.
Yeah, exactly. And like, yeah, I get the role in the story. Like, I get the thematics to it, but like, it's when I like the fact that he had to make his own one, even though I thought gameplay wise that bit was like, you know, kind of pace killing. I like that tomb, but I like that when you come out of there, you learn the double sided, the double,
Split saber,
yeah. And I like that as well. And I think that's the bit where the game kicked into high gear for me, where I was like, yep, I'm full on Jedi, my own saber, purple saber, and I'm just wiping everybody out.
My own saber part, I think if that was the point where you created your own saber and you distinguished your version of Cal as coming out of that tomb, you know, renewed as a character and moving past his past trauma, or taking that into account and going forward, that would have been a much more powerful moment. But for me, when I had already like been messing around with everything for like the entire game, going around and getting to change it again, the moment wasn't hammered as more. And I know this is kind of, it's a crappy point because I know that they can't do anything else in that position, but at the same time, I thought it did kind of take away from the narrative element of that gameplay feature.
Yeah, for me, that even though I enjoyed that moment, I thought it was quite empowering to see Cal finally make his own saber. I thought it could have been handled a bit more or driven home, like you said, Scott, even though it's obvious that, you know, it's his master's lightsaber or whatever. I feel like they could have done more with it before then, maybe changed around a few of the scenes, maybe show you the moment where, you know, he sacrifices himself for Cal earlier on and you've got this lightsaber that's broken, or maybe, you know, push the double edge part of it off until later on in the story, maybe when you actually make it. That could have been such a great moment, and it is a good moment, but for me, I would have liked them to double down on it more. I don't think it would have been too much a problem had they had the lightsaber customization, but then thematically and narratively, you know, emphasize that you can only do so much with it, or, you know, you can't change the color, for instance. Like, this is, you know, your master saber, you kind of only do so much with it, and then you get free reign over it towards the end, which they kind of do with the crystals, but again, it just sort of feels like one of those things, like you said, where they haven't got the balance quite right, and I really love what they're going for, and I really appreciate it in the moment, but it's just, there's a nagging feeling with this game that it's good, but it could be great, you know what
that's
I mean?
Kind of where I come down on it, and like I said, like, yeah, I have a problem with the way some parts of it clash, but that's kind of the thing. It's like the gameplay priority versus the narrative priority or the storytelling priority, and things like the force powers, like, I thought, like, for the most part across the board, they're very basic, and that's fine. Then it all becomes about the utilization of them, and you are using them to fundamentally get through levels, which is fine, but stuff like the way he remembers them, like, it's just kind of like I had not a massive problem with it, but I was like, okay, you've just remembered that you could double jump. You've just remembered that you could pull or push. Like, that was just kind of weird for me, and it puts down to, oh, well, he cut himself off from the Force. And I'm like, you could have nailed that so much
better. The double jump one was like, I did kind of laugh a little bit at that. I was like, oh, really? You forgot to double jump? And like, the same with the Force push and pull. I thought those are fairly basic, you know. But I guess, you know, in the Metroidvania element, there's not much else they can do.
And
I totally agree with you, though.
Yeah, and it's like, on the one hand, he's like forever kind of haunted by living up to his master's words, but he forgets the parts that his master told him, and it's a weird sort of thing, but like I said, it prioritizes gameplay. Speaking of that as well, like, I guess in terms of some of the level layouts, the bit when you go up the mine tree at the top of Kashyyyk?
Yeah, the tree.
The big old tree.
I forgot what the tree's called.
The Crash Bandicoot level. That's the thing, when that bit became like super gamey, that was another bit that stuck out to me, when you were like bounding between these like super bouncy flowers and you're sliding and jumping and bouncing again. Yeah. And I was like, what are you making here? Like, that kind of lost me a bit.
It's interesting, because I want to know what you think about this unit, because I talked to Benroy about this. I know he didn't like that bit, but I quite enjoyed climbing
the bouncy
that
bit.
Tree. I thought it was visually interesting.
Visually lush,
I like bouncing around. I thought it was quite an arcadey sort of way to break up the combat. For me, that was fun. It was silly fun, yeah. But I thought it worked.
I liked it, apart from those grotesque slithering plant things that edge slowly towards it. Like, I can deal with the spiders, but yep. Those gross slithering plant things that are going, hey!
With
like
the little faces.
I hated that. I hated
there
that so much.
There is a movie called The Ruins that's all about like killer plants and vines that sort of do that same thing where you're asleep and then these sort of crawl. Oh, yeah, it reminded me of that and it freaked me out. I didn't like it when I was trying to move around. I was like, throw my lightsaber and then yeah. get back.
But I did like the I thought that as a... I thought the platforming there, it was good because otherwise it would just devolve into the same mess of sliding, jumping, wall running. I thought that was a great way of breaking it up and I enjoyed the bit where you're getting chased by the Ninth Sister and you're like crashing around through the different places and like escaping, and I thought the whole stuff with the shark bird again was really cool. I thought that was a great moment. I love that.
I think all the boss battles in this game are like amazing. They're some of my favorite parts. I was having a bit of trouble because I was playing it on Jedi Master, which was a bit more difficult than I expected it to be, which made some of the enemy encounters, you know, a bit frustrating when I was getting overwhelmed. Yeah. And, I should just get good, but...
Some of it is made to be cheap as hell.
That's it. Yeah. Especially when people are like hiding around corners and stuff and need ambush here. But I thought that difficulty really excelled in the boss fights. I never thought any of the bosses were cheap. I thought they were all like really good, really challenging. They all made sense. Especially I've forgotten the dude's name. Is it Malikos?
Talon Malikos, yeah.
Talon Malikos. He was an absolute word I cannot say on YouTube, but it took me a long time to beat him. But when I finally sort of figured out how by being sort of aggressive and hitting him with these combos, it felt so good.
The thing is, I agree with you that most of the boss battles, like once you get the patterns down, it's solid. But I would disagree that they're complete. That they're all like they fall back on like, well, this character's glowing red, therefore they're invulnerable, and they can kick into an invulnerable state.
They're not invulnerable. They're not invulnerable.
Go on.
But the glowing red thing, you can interrupt attacks if you attack them when if you're fast enough, you can actually interrupt a glowing red.
That thing
is literally just like to say that. You can't do a precision dodge. You have to precision evade or interrupt the attack.
Okay, well, that was barely communicated in the game. But even so, some of the things that, like, a couple of things that annoyed me is, like, some of the bigger boss battles you do. One against the big giant bat thing. Both of them, they both have charge attacks that are quote-unquote invulnerable, and they can kick into them even when you're right up close. So they'll just flash red and hit you straight away. And I really thought that was cheap. Because it was just like, if you telegraph this through any animation, I would have reacted.
I think I never felt as though any defeat that I had, I never felt as though it was unfair, weirdly. I think the problem with that I've had is that I've kind of not really played too much Souls, Bloodborne, whatever. I've kind of, when I've been playing games, I've been kind of sick of the fact that the studio is really focused on empowering you as a player. And I think empowerment is fine, but you need the element of challenge. Mm-hmm. And there was something more, one of the most gratifying experiences I had this year playing a video game was fighting Talon Malikos, getting my ass kicked the first time, getting really annoyed that it puts to the bat where you have to fight his two little thugs again and then go all the way back and fight him. But when I got him the second time, I was like, oh wait, I've actually learned something, which is like I think you secretly
love Souls
Bloodborne I thought was too cheap. I think the thing with Fallen Order is that I never felt as though it was cheap in places.
I did for the enemy placements around the corner. For the spiders, the crabs and the rats that just burst out the ground.
The exploding spiders were annoying when they just leave behind a residue, but when the guys coming around the corners, I just learned to just keep my block up as I was walking around, because I thought that every time I was presented with a threat, I felt as though I had the choice to actually adapt to it.
That's why I like the bat boss, because I was getting annoyed by his unblockable charge attacks at first, but then it encouraged me to experiment with the force powers, and then I unlocked some like secret like tips and tricks the game doesn't tell you.
Check out the video.
I kept freezing him in place and then hitting his head, which took off a load of damage. Yes. And every time he was running towards me, I would freeze him then and try to get around him and stuff. So there was always ways, at least in my eyes, for me to get beyond those sort of, you know, flashing red charge attacks. Like, there was another boss, I can't remember who it was, but every single time they jumped up for one of those, if I used the force pull, it would put him in, like, a really vulnerable state.
Yes.
Assault him, like, that way, and it took off a big chunk of health. Mm-hmm. And it was just finding those tactics by, like, feeling your way through combat trying new things, which I thought was really cool and rewarding.
Which is, like, a very Sekiro thing. Like, when you realize that you can defeat Madame Butterfly by knocking her out the sky in Sekiro, like, things like that. That stuff's great. I don't think that they do a great job, like I said, with restricting you from so many powers until nearer the end. They don't do a great job of saying, like, here's this sandbox of potential that you can play with.
They don't nearly give you enough force, I feel a lot of the time. I like the idea of being a Padawan and still learning my way around, but I did feel as though it's like, oh, I've done two heavy attacks, I'm all out of force. I thought that was a little bit
waiting for one thing to restore to one more thing.
Once I got the upgrade towards the end where BD's like stim pack up, like get your force back. That changed the game. I was just cursing that that wasn't in earlier on, so I could finally experiment with.
I wish one of the skill tree upgrades was for him just to sort of like cleanse his mind for a sec while you're blocking or something, and get a little chunk of it back or something like that. Because the force powers are what separate this from just being a Souls clone. And like for me, that was, like I said, was the most fun at the end when you're juggling all of that stuff. We might as well just end on like sort of like sequel thoughts. Unless there's anything else you want to bring up about the game in general.
No, I thought one thing I kind of mentioned again in my review is how great the visual metaphor of Bracca was. I thought the Clone Wars influence on this game was great. I thought that was the thing that I love about this is that it kind of shows Lucasfilm Story Group at their best when everyone's firing and all the cogs are turning in one place. That all adds to one place in the end. And I thought the idea of, you know, when this game was first announced, I was very frustrated because I thought another game set in between episodes 3 and 4. Okay, well, we've already seen this in Rebels, already seen this in this book, this novel, this comic, whatever. And then the fact that they said it's so close towards the beginning of the Empire's reign, I think 5 years after Revenge of the Sith, I thought they pulled a masterstroke there because they had all the influence of the Clone Wars going through. They got all the voice actors back to reprise those roles, which was great. I thought that was really interesting. I thought setting a game closer towards the beginning of the Empire was far more interesting than if they just set it towards the end, you know, closer towards more of the Rebels and Rogue One time period. So I thought they nailed that down, and I really, really liked
that. Because that does seem to be something that they're doing going forward, like the Kenobi, whatever happens with the Kenobi movie is going to be set in there, and it's like that always seemed to be their big, like, perfect Venn diagram of Star Wars banter, because they get to have all the sort of technology from episode from the early stuff and then go into the more sort of ragtag stuff of the later movies.
Yeah, I would agree with you in that we've had, even though I, like I said before, I haven't really delved into the expanded stuff, I played a lot of games that have been set between this period or whatever, and like read a lot of stories about like this period. It's always felt kind of like you said, a banter period where, for me, I've never had something. I've never consumed a story from that period that's really impacted my whole view on like the entire franchise. Right. I've never found them to be that substantial, because I know there's always either going to be a reset button or it can only affect it to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. But I thought this story worked so well within those parameters, and I genuinely do love the end with Cal sort of cutting the list of names and like
that was funny.
It's just saying, you know what, I'm gonna leave this to the Force. These guys, I don't want to put these guys in danger to let them forge their own destinies. So that was so cool.
That moment was so good as well, because they allude to it earlier on in Kashyyyk when you intervene and then you realize the Empire doubling down their oppression. You know, I thought that moment where you're on Bogano and you're having that vision of you as a master and then all the Jedi getting killed, it's like, that's a very good point. Practically speaking, even though the idea of restarting the Jedi Order is a great idea, it's also the fact that all these, you're literally recruiting child soldiers to get massacred by bloodthirsty, fascistic, Sith-wielding power, which, again, it probably, you know, different things, you have different priorities there. So I thought that moment at the end, I thought that was the obviously the cake and the eat at the moment, but also, you know, it thematically it made sense, the laws they'd already established.
Also ties into like more mature sort of general commentaries on Star Wars fiction, like in Last Jedi, or like I like the I forget what you call the woman that you team up with from Dathomir, one of the
Night Sister Meron.
Yeah, Meron's great, and like she's one of the first people who says to Cal, it's like, well, why do you get to decide that these people are completely safe and everything, but you're going to pull them out of here and put them in the firing line? Like, that wasn't an angle that I saw coming at all, and I quite like that they went there. I thought she was great as well. Yeah. Like in terms of just like agency in the story,
I quite like it. Only happened now and again, but I love those comments on like the fall of the Jedi and like how it was kind of their own fault for getting so, you know,
arrogant
and their hubris, like Luke says in the last show, like that was ultimately their downfall. And I liked that commentary sort of running throughout this, because I think that is a great sort of connective tissue between the prequel trilogy and like the original trilogy and definitely the sequel trilogy. And I didn't expect to see it here, and I am pleased that we did.
As again, the best things about the prequels, the stuff that's made around the prequels, that proves that, you know, George Lucas actually had a solid concept there, but the execution was always lacking. Stuff like the Clone Wars and this game and some of the literature that's come out as well recently from like Del Rey's books, or whether it be Marvel's comics, they really emphasize just how interesting this story is if you actually, you know, really stop to think about the implications of it. And that's the frustrating thing about those films. But hopefully with all this added material, you'll be able to go back to those films and maybe, you know, reappraise certain aspects of it and maybe see how this, you know, kind of helps make that moment in Revenge of the Sith feel a little bit more earned or whatever. So obviously it's not going to completely redeem those films. I mean, I like certain elements of them, but I think the best thing about the prequels is the stuff that's come out around the
prequels. Conceptual stuff, yeah, for sure. In terms of a sequel, what do you want to see? Because for me, this at the end of this, I was loving the last few hours. The last few levels. Like I said, where you have full access to everything. Like, that's what I want going forward. That's why I love the Jedi Academy more than Jedi Outcast. And I just want, like I said, a sandbox of potential, something like the PsyOps games or Second Sight or whatever. Give me a bunch of physics-based powers and let me throw dudes around and cut them in half and whatever. So for me, I don't care necessarily where the story goes, but I want the combat to be more at the front of it. I want to have more fun with the combat more consistently and less puzzles for me.
Yeah, I feel, though, it's weird. We talked about them having their cake and their eat moment there, where they have to close up this thread. But the fact that they haven't closed the thread presents more challenges, because there isn't the inevitability element again. You know, not to spoil Star Wars Rebels for you, but the Jedi in that show, you know, Kanan, he dies, Ezra goes missing for ages, as does Ahsoka for a while. So none of the Jedi in that show end up actually being around by the time Rogue One or A New Hope actually starts. So that's that loose end effectively closed off. If you continue these guys' adventures, eventually something has to unravel. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious whether or not, you know, they considered their story ended here, which I don't think they do, because I think the ending clearly tees up for more adventures in the galaxy. Mm-hmm. I think you could probably do something not so much irreverent as much as it is free-spirited, where you could have them battering around with Grease and Night System Era and doing all sorts of different things in the galaxy. Mm-hmm. But maybe the thing that might be a better choice to take would be to have a different era Star Wars game and apply the lessons you've learned here and do it there. I don't think that's what they're going to do. But that's only because, for me, thinking logically, I find it difficult. Maybe that's their end goal, though. Maybe they want to kind of continue with these guys and then just crush all our hearts like a third game or whatever.
I'd like to see that, to be fair.
I was going to say, if they did like an academy style thing, they could just jump forward, make Cal the teacher and give you someone else. And then that would be a way to sort of carry forward whatever his influence is.
But again, the risks of the whole three or four. What do you think, Josh? Are you kind of like, because I'm kind of torn now. I've just basically worked this out in my head as we've been talking right now. But yeah.
I don't know. I do think that Cal's story and everyone else around him, that has to end in like tragedy, not without hope, not without them achieving something. But I think there is a tragic end to that story that I want to see fulfilled. I would potentially like, you know, maybe a nice little trilogy. Maybe we have the next game be more bantering around the galaxy, trying to be better, and then the eventual inevitable demise of everyone, or, you know, most people, but having achieved something. We go back to Rogue One. I want there to be sort of, that is awesome because you know all those characters are essentially doomed, but even though it's tragic, you do have that hope in them getting the Death Star plans. If we could mimic something like that for a sequel or the second sequel in this series, I think that would be a satisfying end point, and it would wrap up sort of that knot without it feeling inconsequential.
I quite liked how, I mean, they could tie stuff in. At this point, I don't know what dangling thread they've got left to pull from, unless you're like making Luke's T-16 or something, like, whatever. But I think
you've got the whole Axiom Brood and stuff that they've got, I guess, where you could pull, you know, they introduced that charismatic gangster on that planet. So there's stuff to do there. And, you know, obviously Lucasfilm Story Group had plans with her, because I think Solo takes place around a similar time period to when Fallen Order does. So you have all that in mind as well. So there's clearly stuff there that Lucasfilm want to explore. And I wonder if they could do something where you end up taking on Paul Bettany in Solo, or you actually meet up with Darth Maul before he, you know, dies at Obi-Wan's hands.
There's so many, Spider-Maul.
There are different ways you can go here, but like, it's at a glance, as someone who personally does not have an amazing insight into what is going on at this period in time, it is difficult to shape the feeling of inevitable tragedy.
Yeah, I mean, these guys have literally just gone toe-to-toe with Darth Vader. He's not going to be forgetting that anytime soon, you know
it's
what I mean?
True.
I'm not going to say he's going to be the protagonist of the next game, but I doubt he's going to give up on the pursuit of these
people. One other thing, just to sort of tie it off in terms of like the business realities of making this, like, this game started before EA acquired Respawn. Whenever we look at the way that this game was marketed, the way it was talked about, the way that EA treated it and the spotlight they didn't put on it, it's weird, because I think if you look at everything else EA's done this generation, especially with Star Wars, they've promoted everything else so much more. Anything that they have recurrent spending methods with, Battlefront obviously, and, you know, the launch of that was a big old mess. But I wonder if your EA, do they even want a sequel to this? Did they just like finish this off because it was the project that was in motion when they acquired Respawn? Like, there's that whole side of it
as
well.
The weirdest thing about this is that, on one hand, I definitely agree. I think EA haven't really focused on promoting this game at all. I think, weirdly, more the promotion is coming out now after the game is out. You've seen loads of adverts for it, obviously in the build-up to Rise of Skywalker. But, you know, maybe that's in their business model, even though they don't necessarily care for single-player experiences. They were within their minds to not necessarily, this is me purely speculating, but I do think Fallen Order could have done with at least a good few months more of polish before it released.
Oh yeah, the bugs.
So the fact that they, obviously, you can't have this game release after Rise of Skywalker or after Christmas, those will be weighing in their business minds as well. So it's interesting in that sense. I mean, I have no idea how it's performing financially at this current moment in time, but I would hope that they see the value to continue it. We know we've got another Star Wars game coming before 2022, which is probably going to be Battlefront 3, I'd wager, for the next gen. So Yeah.
I hope they do more with this. I think like there's too much stock been put into it, like in terms of it has like an original, it has the game engine that they use, the combat model that they coded, the characters that they've built, and the actors that they've cast are way too promising to only do a one-off with. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be nice in, well, it'll be regarded positively forever if it only is a one-off, but I think that the way that this ends is very much like, cool, we've trained you, you're the Jedi, go forward.
That's it. I think even though we have our problems with it, there is room for improvement. Mm-hmm. It has resonated so much with fans, like everyone across like message boards and, you know, fan forums and stuff like that are praising the game and really
I love
embracing
it.
But we love this kind of Star Wars, and EA is kind of lacking in sort of goodwill or that sort of fan drive.
They could do with a win.
Yeah, you could do with a win. Yeah. And I think this is a win, and it would, in my eyes, be kind of foolish to not capitalize on that with a sequel, because it's, when it comes to Star Wars and when it comes to games, when it comes to video game fans, it's not been a good few years. It's been an uphill battle, and I do think they've got there with the likes of Battlefront 2 now, but this is a win out the gate, and to drop that for me would make no sense.
Let's think down in the comments below as to the future of Star Wars single player games, and come find us on social media as well if you're listening along on the audio platforms. For now though, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast, and I've been your host Scott Tilford, joined by Ewan Patterson.
Goodbye.
And Josh Brown.
Goodbye.
Catch you later, bye.
That's a weird ending.
I know,
like
that's the wrong word. I was going to go ba ba ba. Catch you later, bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.